Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad we can connect. We'll talk some blood stock in a minute, but I want to do Breeders' Cup first. And, you know, I saw your piece about the fact that, you know, most of the win in urines were going to bypass the race and that, you know, the international set has really not scored out in this race the way I think some people assumed that they would.
No, they really haven't. And I think when you add, you know, the turf races to the program, of course, you know, you expect international participation. You expect some of these turf standouts internationally, you know, to make an impact in the race. But I think these turf sprints are just, you know, number one, I think they're so suited to an American type of horse. This is really an area where American turf runners have dominated. And number two, I think with the number of, you know, rich international sprints happening at this time of year, of course, you know, there was the Group 1 sprint on the ARC undercard earlier this month in France. There's the British Champions Sprint Stakes coming up this weekend. I think it's a case, you know, as with many European outfits, that they would choose to focus their top horses on those races at home rather than shipping internationally, which, you know, you can't blame them. I think this year, though, we have had some unusual circumstances. You know, I think Blue Point, who is the acknowledged top sprinter in training earlier this year after winning in Dubai and winning two Group 1 races in a week at Royal Ascot, he was retired after Royal Ascot. Batash kind of inherited the top sprinter in Europe crown from him, you know, and they were strongly considering a run at the Breeders' Cup until, you know, he had kind of a perplexingly poor run in France over soft ground. So they sort of scrapped their plans to go on with him in favor of giving him a break and giving him a full workup. You know, he will return to training next year, so we'll have to see if they decide to make a run at Keeneland with him. And then, you know, Soldier's Call, who was a horse that I was really looking forward, honestly, to seeing at Santa Anita. I thought he was crying out for that sort of firm ground. You know, they decided to stop on him, and he's been retired after, again, another poor showing in France on soft ground. So I think it's going to come down to a couple of Aidan O'Brien's fillies to represent the European contingent in the, you know, in the turf sprint, which I think is a strong home team, if you will, headed by Pee Wee Reese and Eddie Haskell. And some really nice horses shipping in from elsewhere, led by Totally Boss from Kentucky here.
The Aidan O'Briens, of course, So Perfect, who pretty much penciled in, right? That one we're sure about, Fairyland, not as sure?
Well, I think it's actually the opposite.
Okay.
Fairyland, who owns Win and You're In Win by virtue of her victory over So Perfect in the Flying Five at the Curragh, I believe they have Fairyland penciled in. So Perfect holds an entry to the race I mentioned earlier, the sprint race on the British Champions program this weekend. Not out of the question that she could make the turnaround. Horses have done it in the past, but I think they're going to wait and see how this weekend unfolds before finalizing their plans.
Well, then let's walk through the field then, the ones we know. And you mentioned the two West Coasters that come out of a terrific throwdown against each other, Eddie Haskell and Pee Wee Reese from Mark Glatt and Phil D'Amato, respectively. You know, one of the big storylines, Nicole, in this is, of course, the reduction in distance of this race.
Mm-hmm.
All the prior times it's been run at Santa Anita when it was down the hill, and Breeders' Cup, which will utilize the hill for the filly and mare turf and for the turf at a mile and a half. Those races will start at the mile and a quarter and mile and a half spots, but it's a lot different than, you know, horses coming from the top of the hill. So we've got the abbreviated version of this.
Yeah, the turf sprint, you know, certainly a different configuration, as you mentioned. In past years at Santa Anita, it's been run at 6.5. this year it'll be run at 5 furlongs, you know, and Eddie Haskell and Pee Wee Reese and two-time defending Turf Sprint winner Stormy Liberal, who's winless this year, they all got a chance to run that 5 furlong distance at Santa Anita in the Eddie D, with Pee Wee Reese prevailing over Eddie Haskell. Those two horses are actually the current favorites on the line that my colleague Brad Free has put together for the Turf Sprint. He has Eddie Haskell favored currently at 4-1, with Pee Wee Reese just behind him at 9-2. Eddie Haskell, you know, has really shown a liking for the Santa Anita course, won a couple of stakes here earlier this year. Was flattered when Stubbins, who he ran against over the summer, came back and won the Woodford at Keeneland to earn a spot in the Turf Sprint. And Pee Wee Reese just, you know, he came off the bench. He came off a long layoff for a strong win in the Eddie D over that field. He needs to be supplemented to the Breeders' Cup for $100,000, but I believe they're going to go ahead and do that, barring anything going amiss in his big workout, which is scheduled for this weekend.
Well, in addition to the top three finishers coming out of the Eddie D, we look to perennial Turf Sprint fountainhead, the Generazios, and
yes.
Frank and Patricia, Disco Partner, retired a few days ago. He's going to stand stud, and with his sire, you know, having had the laminitis that, you know, took him from us at, I think, 17, Disco Rico. Every expectation that Disco Partner will find success at stud. And pure sensation, though, the 8-year-old gelding, frankly, the argument could be made he's never been better than he is coming into this race.
Yeah, you know, he's going to be taking his fourth tilt at the Breeders' Cup. He's 8 years old. You know, he's as good as ever with 3 stakes wins this year, coming off his win in the Turf Monster at Parks. I think he's got a big shot. He's shown that he can ship to California and run well in the past. And, you know, I really do think he's got a big shot. You talk about the Generazios and all their success with Turf Sprinters. Trainer Rusty Arnold holds a huge hand going into this race with both Totally Boss and Leinster going in off, you know, strong runs here in Kentucky. So I really think, you know, I think the we've got quote unquote the home team defending against, you know, a lot of strong runners coming in from other jurisdictions.
Well, and Totally Boss for Jim and Susan Hill, Leinster for Amy Dunn, and Rusty with that pair. I want to mention a horse that's going to come in, I think, a little bit of an unknown, but Final Frontier, part of this onslaught of Godolphin stake winners. Nicole, it's been a really heady, I don't know, 6 weeks, and Tom Albertrani has been part of that parade. There's nothing wrong with this Ghost Sapper colt that really has found himself over the last, you know, 90 to 120 days.
Yeah, he's a really well-bred colt. You know, he finally put it all together with that solid win at Belmont in the Turf Sprint Invitational, which earned him the berth in the in the Turf Sprint, over a nice field. You know, he beat some nice horses, including Shecky Shabazz, who's going ahead to the Turf Sprint. Disco Partner, who we mentioned, was back in there. He really put things together, and he's a horse moving in the right direction, which you'd like to see at this point.
Well, a couple of the other names you mentioned, Stubbins and Stormy Liberal, that gets us into, you know, sort of the other body of the race, and the expectation, you know, just looking at what you've been keeping track of, this looks like it will oversubscribe.
You know, it has most years, and I am anticipating the race oversubscribing, particularly because, you know, some people will go ahead and cross-center, say, this and also the mile at a bit longer and wait to see who else is entered where. But, you know, this race has had, you know, 12, 13, 14 runners but most years, so I do anticipate that we're going to, you know, go ahead and have a full starting gate again.
We should also mention Joe Orsino in here with Imprimis. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, Nicole, you kind of thought that he was going to be a dominant factor. And I don't want to say the questions have started to, you know, pile up, but it really has not been the year that I think Joe O was hoping for with him.
Well, you know, he's gone winless a bit here since his win in the Shakertown at Keeneland. But you know, I don't think he's run poorly at all. I think, you know, they took the ambitious trip to Royal Ascot. I think he ran very creditably over ground that was perhaps not to his liking. A lot of horses struggled with that there. He had the time off, as you would expect, coming back from Ascot. He's coming off two solid efforts in Kentucky behind horses that we've talked about that are nice horses. I think, he had some trouble in the Woodford. Several horses had troubled trips in there. So I don't think he's coming into this race in bad form at all. And I think if someone liked Imprimis earlier in the year, there's no reason to back off of him now.
No, agreed. I mean, you certainly only have a certain number of opportunities when it comes to, this, this kind of an opportunity. So certainly they're going to take their shot. And, this was a horse that we kind of latched onto fairly early. Give us a couple of the other potentials that have been tracked. I mean, you had Belvoir Bay on the list, Bound for Nowhere, Jidou, Girls Know Best, Legends of War, Samantha Siegel's Mr. Vargas, Good Old Ohm, etc. Who do we know that it would like to run?
Well, I know that Sheki Shabazz, who we mentioned earlier, right, would like to run. He's coming off a nice effort in New York behind Final Frontier, who we just spoke about, and Belvoir Bay, Ohm, I think they're on the list. I think this is just going to have to be something that we kind of wait and see how it sorts out.
Well, run down a couple of the others that you're tracking.
Let's see. I just want to make sure that I'm giving you my current list here, Steve. So let me grab it.
That's all right. I'll check them off as you bring them up.
So I apologize. Hold on a moment.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm sure Samantha Siegel would love to be on hand for Mr. Vargas, certainly running.
Yeah, Mr. Vargas ran very well earlier this year, but I'm kind of waiting to see what they do with him. I don't think the run in the Eddie D went as they were expecting. Bound for Nowhere would be coming off a break, but he's been working strongly here at Keeneland, for Wesley Ward. We mentioned Belvoir Bay. We've mentioned Fairyland already. Justaholic, the Breeders' Cup has been tracking. I know Ohm, who we mentioned. Legends of War is coming off a win going a bit longer at Kentucky Downs, but I think he could cut back in distance. And, Smart Remark, who's also run well recently, so...
Well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. That's 18 right there. So that's without any cross-entry types and so forth. So we will obviously what's the gate? The gate is 12?
Yes, and as I said, this is a race that historically has oversubscribed or had a full gate. So this is nothing out of the ordinary for this race.
No,
it's been very popular since its addition to the Breeders' Cup program.
Well, and I think back to a few of the, and of course this was down the hill. So when you think about there was Dimension. Dimension was a horse that came over, and there were some milers that famously were going to cut back to the 6.5. It didn't work for them either when they tried it. I'm forgetting some of the names, but it's clearly this year with what 10 out of the 12 most likely to be domestic. Domestic mm-hmm. runners, local types. So, all right, and I would think the opportunity for the local horses. You think back Misdirection. Did she win? Did she win both of hers?
She did. She won. She won twice. Yeah.
Down the hill, both. I know one was down the hill.
I believe so.
Yeah, and because you think about it. Well, Desert Code, absolutely down the hill with MIG. That one was the first one. But you think about some of the ones that have won it, and how much the local angle may have played in into the scenario. Chamberlain Bridge, certainly that was a Churchill, et cetera.
Well, like I said, that's why I think, that's why I think it's so important that the local prep, the Eddie D, was run at that 5-furlong configuration that the Turf Sprint is going to be run at. So we did get an opportunity to see how the local horses would transfer their form to that course as opposed to a downhill course. So I do think that, kind of having that run is going to play a key factor for the likes of Eddie Haskell and Pee Wee Reese.
Well, we'll continue to keep track and watch Nicole's working list and her updates at DRF. Nicole, let's also utilize your expertise and your other hat that you wear frequently. It is the bloodstock trade. We had a mixed sale, the first mixed sale of the fall here at Saratoga on Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much the same, from a number standpoint, the numbers were pretty much equal with a year ago. It's always interesting to see the weanlings. You had some first crop and Practical Joke jumped up and made a nice showing. Some thoughts as we get into the season for the mixed sales and the broodmare sales. We'll have broodmares in full coming up too in November. We'll have the runners coming out of Breeders' Cup. That's always a glittery night at Fasig. The Keeneland sale as well. And then Monday through Thursday next week, we've got the October yearlings at Fasig.
Yeah, we're kind of coming from all quarters of the bloodstock markets here. As you mentioned, the October sale next week at Fasig here in Kentucky kind of wraps up your formal yearling sale season. It's a four-day sale, and really it's become a bit of a destination for if you had a later developing horse, perhaps you targeted them for the sale all along. If you had them entered in another sale and perhaps things didn't work out for one reason or another, young horses can have all sorts of just normal growth spurts and growing pains that could cause you to say, let's wait another month with him. This sale is really kind of the last stop for the yearling market, so I think there is a sense of urgency in the buying. And also, people know that these are going to be the later developing horses. So sometimes we do see some really nice physicals at this sale. I think this year they've gotten a really, strong and nice catalog. There's a yearling out of day at the Spa who was, champion turf mare a few years back. There's a half brother to Batoli in there who's going to be one of our favorites for the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I think they've gotten a really nice catalog. The usual suspects kind of at the top of the sire chart, Tappet, Warfront, Into Mischief, Curlin, Medallia Doro all in there, but also some really nice, well-bred horses by Run Happy, Nyquist, Frosted, who have been our leading first crop yearling sires, throughout the season with their youngsters.
How is this these 4 days? How are they split up?
There's not a book one, book two, book three. They just, it begins randomly, by a letter, by the dam's name, and continues
sure.
alphabetically through the 4 days. So it's kind of luck of the draw as to what day your horse has landed on.
The catalogs are here, and I have not gone through them, but I saw they were tinted different colors, and I wondered if there was a select, if one of them was a, if day one was going to be a little bit more of a select group, but it's not. Okay.
No, and I think they're pretty evenly distributed. Going through when I was kind of shortlisting the sale, I think I came up with standout horses on all 4 days. I should have mentioned now that I'm looking at my list. There's a half half-brother to Got Stormy in there, who we expect to contest the Breeders' Cup Mile. There's a half-brother to Stormy Liberal, who we talked about earlier, who will be back to defend his win in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. There's a half-brother to Code of Honor, who we're expecting to see in the Classic. There's really quite a few nice horses in this catalog.
Well, any impressions that you came away with just watching, you know, the weanlings, and of course a lot of a weanling marketplace right now is this weanling to yearling pinhook market.
Yeah, and I think I think we'll get a wider representation of that at the upcoming Keeneland November sale. That's more of a bellwether, but. You mentioned, this first sale up in Saratoga, which tends to attract kind of a local contingent. But the first crop weanling sires were, very well received. Practical Joke with the top two lots of the auction. And I do expect, quite a bit of popularity for that son of Into Mischief. Into Mischief, of course, the leading general sire, already proving himself as a sire of sires with, Golden Sense, who was among last year's leading freshmen. So Practical Joke, some of these other young sons of Into Mischief coming to stud and coming to the commercial market. I expect people to try to jump on those trains early, and we certainly saw that with the first weanlings by Practical Joke. And again, we'll get, sort of a wider swath of representation coming up to these November sales in Kentucky just by virtue of their larger catalogs. We will see the first weanlings by Gunrunner and by Arrogate, so I know that's very anticipated.
Well, in addition to the domestic marketplace, the other day you wrote a piece that caught my eye, and I didn't get a chance yesterday with Sid Fernando to bring it up, but you wrote about the American buyers, the operations the domestically that are now looking at Tattersalls. And of course, Chad Brown and Seth Klarman went and marauded recently and are seeing, the fruits of that already. Talk a little bit about the conversations you had on that topic.
Right. Well, I think it's very interesting. And, Todd Pletcher, who bought some yearlings over there for the first time this month, Todd Pletcher discussed with my colleague Dave Grenning how there are just, there are more turf opportunities in America right now. So, you have to kind of go, if you go over to Europe, of course, you're going to get more diversity in the bloodlines in terms of top turf sires, perhaps turf quality. Chad Brown, as you mentioned, has been doing that successfully for a number of years. Chad Brown was over there shopping for a number of clients, this time in conjunction with noted bloodstock agent Mike Ryan. Todd Pletcher, as we mentioned, went over there. BSW Bloodstock, Liz Crow went over and signed, for five yearlings. China Horse Club and Windstar. Of course, Windstar has, kind of delved into international markets very successfully. They went over and purchased Yoshida as a young horse in Japan. So I do think it's an interesting reaction. I've been watching for several years now kind of the rise of some turf opportunities for young horses in the U.S. Of course, I think we're a little more than a decade into these two-year-old turf races at the Breeders' Cup. We added a new one last year in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. You have now Naira taking the races like the Belmont Derby and Belmont Oaks and developing the Turf Triple. And I think what we're seeing is now of course people, we always talk about people looking for a derby horse, and I think kind of, sort of the prevailing opinion was that turf was something you did as a plan B. But now I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think, I think people can take a nice turf horse and develop him or her and have prestigious goals for them. So I think we are seeing a rise, in the popularity of turf racing and American horses competing internationally in turf racing, with the likes of Tepin and Lady Aurelia and, some of these horses that have very successfully gone overseas. you know, so I think turf racing is on the rise. I'm waiting to see the bloodstock market start to respond to it a little bit more. You know, of course, outside of Warfront, who, you know, is so popular internationally, I think our stallion lists are still kind of dominated by dirt-type stallions. But, of course, we have these horses now that are going to be going to stud in coming years who were dual surface grade one winners, the likes of Catholic Boy, Yashida, you know, and others. So I'm waiting to see how turf-type stallions begin to be received, if there's a shift in the market in the U.S., and certainly U.S. buyers going over, and making more of an impact in the European marketplace, I think, is part of this larger, sort of overarching story. So I think there's a lot of things in play here that are very, very interesting.
Well, and just this week, in fact, with yesterday's news from Hill and Dale, here's Lost Treasure coming to join the Stallion roster. John Secura already brought Flincher in.
Mm-hmm.
The Kitten's Joy for the back half of his career, even World of Trouble, technically, given his dual surface success. So Hill and Dale, obviously, very much tapped into this concept. And you'd have to include the horse we discussed yesterday with Sid as well, DeMarchelier and Claiborne's foray in this front.
I think that's very interesting, and he'll be the first son of Duvali, who's so successful internationally, to stand here in Kentucky. And I think if you want to talk about American Farms bringing in European type stallions, Lane's End with Noble Mission, even though his top runner so far is succeeding on the dirt, but I think Noble Mission was a very
yep.
interesting pickup for them, yep. sort of playing the long game there.
Well, Nicole, you're a multi surface threat yourself, because you're covering Keeneland a little bit. You're taking up the Matt Hegarty mantle. Matt loves to pitch in and cover some Kentucky Downs and Keeneland, and you're doing the same thing. So whatever they want you to do, you're ready for. Good job.
Thanks, Steve.
It's a pleasure. Nicole Russo, everybody, DRF Nicole Russo on Twitter, does a tremendous job, as you've heard when we talked to her about the bloodstock trade, but not limited at all to that. She's covering, she's always been, since her tenure began at DRF, she's covered at least one race on the Breeders' Cup coverage, and does dynamite work. We've been a wonderful addition in the tradition of Glennie Kane Oakford, Nicole Russo. We'll take a break. Bottom of the hour rolling in, and Steve Haskin. Steve's not rolling anywhere. He's very stationary, and after tromping around Kentucky, he's home, and I don't know how long he'll be able to visit with us, but I did want to hear about the trip. Steve's leg is killing him. We feel terrible. But we'll get Steve Haskin in for a little bit of a visit. Tony Black, Rich Eng, and more. Stay with us. Second half at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races a little bit past the bottom of the hour, and Steve Haskin, back from the trip to Kentucky, the Secretariat celebration, the festival, the unveiling of that incredible, incredible bronze. If you haven't seen it, it's just amazing. The same sculptor, the woman that did Sergeant Reckless statue at the horse park. And Steve, I know you're hurting, but everybody appreciates what had to be a pretty courageous effort.
You mean me, the statue?
Both.
I'm not sure
both.
What you're talking about.
Soon there'll be a statue of you. Mike Blowen wants to put a bronze of you up at Old Friends, undoubtedly.
Well, I'm closer to Reckless than I am Secretary. the statue was incredible. I mean, she did an amazing job. She really did. I'm absolutely honored and flattered to know that, you know, of all the different inspirations she used, one of them was a photo of Secretariat that I took working out for the Wood Memorial, where he's stretched out, where that leg is stretched out and his back legs are, it's a full stride. As long as his stride can get, and she used the neck muscles. It shows the rippling neck muscles in there. So the last time we were in Kentucky, when she showed off the little small model, she told me that she used that photo. So then went to see the real thing, which is enormous, and every detail. Every detail, absolutely perfect. It really captures the horse. It actually looked great. Where they unveiled it, a team, right outside the sales pavilion, it looked great. You know, I hope no, lunatic, because it's in the middle of nowhere now, so any lunatic can come and deface it or try to ride it or do whatever they want with it. I'd like to think nobody's stupid enough to do that, but, you never know. But, I mean, when they unveiled it at Keeneland, I said, wow, it looks great right here. I mean, right outside the sales pavilion. But, I went around the traffic circle because, where they're doing it, it's right on the intersection of Old Frankfort Pike and Alexandria Drive. And that intersection, I always thought of that intersection because I was... Old Frankfort Pike, that's where Darby Dan is and King Ranch. And when I used to go to Kentucky, all through the late 70s and all through late 60s and all through the 70s when I stayed there. You know, my main thing was driving out Old Frankford Pike, which is to me the most beautiful road. If you want to see farms and just beautiful undulating roads, you go up and down. It's like a roller coaster, but it's absolutely gorgeous. So I always thought of that intersection as the gateway to the breeding farms, because if you go towards town, it's factories and, I don't know how it is now, but it used to be like rundown houses, called Irish Town and stuff. But if you go the other way, all of a sudden, there was Dineda Farm, King Ranch, Darby Den, and now you got Three Chimneys, you got Stone Street. You had the old Farris Farm where Lady Secret was. It's just absolutely gorgeous, and it takes you right past Wallace Station where, with a really classic place to eat, and then right into Midway. So, and once you get into Midway, you have your choice of where you want to go for breeding. Or you can go straight. You can go left to go to Lane's End. So, it's all around there. So, it's really a good spot. And, fortunately, they're building. You can see them building it. It's not finished yet. But they're building a pull-off where people can, park their cars. And they can look at it. So, but yeah, she really did a phenomenal job. I mean, that was certainly a highlight. And you should see the crowd they got for it.
They had a huge crowd. I was going to say the throng, and frankly, I don't even think the pictures that I saw did it justice. But I could tell that there was.
Oh, I'll tell you right now, it didn't. I'm gonna post some on Facebook. Because, Joan's in the pictures, so you can get an idea of the scope of it, and I got it from different angles. So I'm going to post different angles of it. I'm sure everybody's seen photos of it already, but, with Joan in it. And, I took pictures of the crowd. I mean, they were just piled up everywhere, because, it's you had the Secretary of Festival crowd, but you had the race crowd, too, there.
Right.
And a lot of people just came just to see the unveiling. And it's huge. So I highly suggest anybody go to Kentucky. First thing to do, just head up Old Frankford Pike, or if you're on Versailles Road from the airport, as soon as you make a right hand turn on Versailles Road, you come to Alexandria Drive. Make a left, take you right to the traffic circle or roundabout, whatever you want to call it. But it was great, and it was very fitting, to be part of the Secretariat Festival. But it was a busy weekend. I got around somehow, but we went to seven farms. On Friday, Joan and I and Mark and Mary Simon. Early in the morning, we went to Judmont to see Arrogate, and then they also brought us out to see a bunch of his foals. Gorgeous, gorgeous falls, and Arrogate, of course, looks spectacular. And then we went right, close by is TaylorMade, so we went to see California Chrome. They brought him out for us, and we had great photos there. And they actually have a California Chrome gift shop, not on the farm, but down the road a piece. It's actually part of a golf course. You go into a golf course, but there's a you can go in and they sell California Chrome souvenirs, and you can get lunch there. It's an interesting place. And then we went to the Kentucky Horse Park just for the heck of it. It was very uncomfortable being wheeled around, but they did get me a wheelchair, which I definitely needed. And then the afternoon we went to Darley, and we saw Bernardini, Medaglia d'Oro, big stallions there, Nyquist. So that was a busy day. And then the fun started, for Saturday, where I led four tours. And it all turned out great. Everyone was sold out early. We went to Lane's End. They brought out all the stallions. Not all the stallions, but a lot of the big-name stallions. They brought out Quality Road and Candy Ride and Liam's Map. And Union Rags, and then it was a meet and greet with APND where everybody came to his stall to pet him and hug him and feed him and stuff like that. So that was Lenny
in the stall with him?
No, he was going to come, but he said at the last minute he said he had things he had to take care of. I told him to come, but you would think he would be. And then the afternoon we went to Claiborne and had another visit to Marchmont Cemetery. I brought a big photo of Damascus that I had taken and got pictures of me with the picture, you know, with Damascus's grave. And it's always, you know, that's also hallowed ground. So we went to Claiborne, and then the next day, we had the rare trip to Calumet. You know, no tourists are allowed in Calumet except ours. So we went to Calumet, sold out. People just want to see that cemetery. You talk about hallowed ground. And he brought out keen ice, and then we saw a lot of stallions in the stall, but the visit to the cemetery was great. And then we ended it off right after that by going to Spendthrift, you know, for a good half an hour to 35 minutes spent with Beholder. Everybody got a chance. They brought her out and paraded her back and forth and then stood her for a while. And she stood out there forever, and then they put her right in her paddock so everybody was able to see her go out in her field. Got a big, gorgeous, beautiful, beautiful field with a beautiful backdrop. And she's got a buddy that goes out with her, so everybody had a chance to see that, so that was great. So all the tours went really well. And then I did a forum with Kate Chenery and I'm forgetting his last name. Otto, he was the actor who played Ron Turcotte in the Secretariat movie. So we did a whole forum on the movie, you know, the pluses and minuses of the movie.
Yeah,
and
you said you were
fair as I was fair as I could be. I was fair. I tell you, my favorite story the whole weekend was Otto was saying that the first three times they filmed the Kentucky Derby, Sham won. they had to keep filming it. He was going crazy. He couldn't get by Sham. They're probably telling the other riders, pull him up, do something. Sham won every running of the Kentucky Derby. They could not get Secretary to go by Sham in the Derby. Finally did after several tries. But the first three tries, I mean, Sham beat Secretary handily.
That's great. That's great. So he
yeah,
finally
I loved
did.
It. That was
Sham finally
beat. That was my favorite story. And even Otto, he admitted some of the things they did, like, you know, saddling Secretary for his maiden race outside the barn, and him mounting the horse outside the barn, and then the whole thing after he got beat in the barn, it was a crazy scene, and then the dancing scene, watching him down. So, I mean, everybody admitted some of the stuff, you know, even Kate did, you know, certainly she admitted, and so... It's funny. She said they sent her the script and some other members of the family, Penny and so she and you know and Penny and I don't know who else, but they went over the script. They read the whole script and they just marked up. You know, this she would never say this. This would never happen. This would never happen. So the whole script was completely marked up. You know, of things that needed to be changed that would never happen. They totally ignored it. They made none of those changes at all. None of them. I don't know why they gave them the script to read it, because they didn't listen to anything they said at all. So, anyway, that was it. So, you know, it was a good weekend, but I did pay the price for it. But it was worth it. I was able to get through it okay. But it was very nice. I highly recommend anybody who's never been to there, you know, come down to Kentucky. You're going to see great stallions. You're going to see broodmares. We've already set up next year. We're definitely going to go see Rachel Alexandra. We'll get a one-on-one meet and greet with her. Lane's End went over really big. I think a lot of people want to go there. So, you know, a lot of the thing, when you go to the horse country tours, you go and they take out, Like a Darley, when we were there, there was a horse country tour going on. And well, they took out one stallion. They took out Nyquist. And we were there, and they said, "Well, you're going to get a treat today. We're going to also take out Medaglia d'Oro." But they don't take out a lot of horses on these horse country tours. You know, you pay the money for it. You know, California Chrome has different tours. They have the horse country tours where you get a meet and greet, you know, in a private showing with California Chrome. And then you also have the VIP tours, which is like, I think it's like $200 or something like that. And they had one coming when we were there, but they bring out, plates of hors d'oeuvres and champagne, you know, so that's the VIP tour, if you want to have culinary entertainment along with California Chrome, who still is just the nicest horse. I mean, he lets you do anything you want to him. He just stands there. He is so so great. And it's, in the morning, and the two farms are right next to each other. If you want to just, in your mind, relive that incredible Breeders' Cup Classic with Arrogate and California Chrome, they're like 10 minutes apart, and just seeing both of those horses. I mean, Arrogate is an absolute beast. I mean, he's just so incredible looking. I mean, he's like a battleship. He really, long, unbelievable. So it was very good. And so now it's time to, I guess, like everybody, gear up for the Breeders' Cup.
Well, I am just impressed, and I appreciate what you did, and knowing that you had to be uncomfortable every minute. So everybody.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, I was able to get around with a cane, even though it was, pretty painful. When I got home, I had to throw the cane away. The cane did no good anymore. The cane was useless. A day earlier, and I'd still be in Kentucky trying to get home. But thank God Joan ordered me wheelchairs at the airport. Otherwise, there's no way in the world I would have. So I don't want to bore your audience with...
But you got to
figure this out. If you haven't had gout, don't get it.
Well, you gotta figure out what the triggers are and what,
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I hadn't had one in like over 2.5 years. So I thought, I had some medication, that was, lowered in dosage. And I thought that was doing a trick. And then it just hit me. I think it might have been the crummy. It might have been. I don't know if it's caused by crummy shoes with holes in them. But it might have been walking too much on bad shoes.
It's an internal thing. It's something you got to.
Yeah, I don't know. It can't be anything. Can't be. It's not. I don't eat meat, so that rules that out. So
no, it's something that you must have gotten plenty of emails, because I forwarded at least three to you that came via. Yeah. Via listeners that
everybody mentioned it to. Everybody said, Oh yeah, I got that. My brother gets that. Oh yeah, my mother.
Somebody
gets
knows
that.
Somebody.
Oh God,
yeah.
It's horrible, it's horrible. Don't eat it. Don't eat beans. Don't eat tofu. Don't eat meat. Don't eat seafood. All right.
All right, I'll stop eating altogether.
Exactly.
That's the end. Well, you talk about switching gears, Steve, to Breeders' Cup, and the first thing that was on your mind was clearly Vino Rosso, as everybody starts to make their arrangements. We got quite a few shipping this weekend, and you seem very focused and trained in on his return to California.
Well, it's funny, I had this story. I somehow managed to get a car. I wrote a column on him on Monday at 3:30 in the morning. I think I better do it now, because I'll never get it done the following morning. So I somehow got a column out. Now I had all the information, the whole backstory with Tanya Gunther, and how close she was to the horse. And I told Tanya, I would love for this to be my Breeders' Cup Classic recap story, but if he doesn't win, then you don't get anything. So I said, I just have to do it ahead of time. I can't take a chance that he's not going to win, and then the story goes to waste. if he, you know, if he doesn't win, they'll probably retire him, and then all the great stuff she gave me, and you know how much she loves this horse, and how much she cried, you know, over him, and you know how close she was from him, and you know him and Justify go to sale together and everything. So I said, you know what, I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't concentrate on anything to do now. So I said, I'm just going to do it now, and then from now to the Breeders' Cup, I'll start working on standings. But the last time I did classic standings, I had him ranked number one. And I'll tell you the main reasons why. The main reasons why is that, you know, if you look at the Breeders' Cup history, classic history, in general, even before the Breeders' Cup, to me, you still have, if it's really close, unless you have an extraordinary, extraordinary three-year-old, you have to give the edge, to me, to the older horses. I think the older horses have an advantage. Especially, you got an older horse who's already shipped out there and won over the track. Then you got Code of Honor, who normally would be number one, because I think Code of Honor is the best horse in the country. I think he's the most talented horse in the country right now. And, you know, whether you believe he should have been put up or not, then, you know, that's immaterial. That's in the past now. Both horses ran great races, okay? So that's totally immaterial. But the thing that keeps nagging in my mind is that I went back and I did the research. And in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic, three-year-olds going to California from the East for the Classic are 0-22. So, and there were some pretty good three-year-olds that have gone out there, but none of them have won. And if you look at the horses, and not a lot of them go from the East to the West and win anyway. And the two that did recently, Mucho Macho Man and Fort Larned, not only were they older horses, but they had already run in the Classic and run big in the Classic. Fort Larned came back and ran a big race after that. I mean, both horses had run, you know, Mucho Macho Man had run a good race in the Classic before he won the Classic. So these are horses that, and they're tough, hard knocking older horses that had run a lot, you know who they were, and you know when they won the Breeders' Cup, it wasn't the greatest field. So I'm not saying this is the greatest field, but you know with the older horses, there's still the question mark of McKenzie. You know, McKenzie's, you know, in my mind, probably still should have won. You know, he had a horrible trip in the Met Mile. But the fact that he ran a winning race in the Met Mile, you know, and the fact that he won all those other races at a mile and an eighth, mile and a 16th, and then the one race at a mile and a quarter, he couldn't get by Gift Box. Now, there's no reason why he shouldn't go a mile and a quarter, but I'm not saying he can't. But there was a question mark, especially coming off the Awesome Again, where, you know, I know everybody was, you know, was saying, I don't know everybody, Bob Baffert was saying that, you know, Mike Smith, obviously, he didn't like his ride, and he took him off. He had every opportunity, I should say, to win that race. I mean, he was right on that horse's tail turning for home. It's not like the other horse got out there by five and was in front by five, and McKenzie was closing in on him. The other Mongolian Groom pulled away from McKenzie. So I don't know. Was it just a prep that he needed? Possibly. If he won the race, if it surprised me, absolutely not. But as the favorite in the race, you know, there are other horses to look at because there is a question mark. And I'll tell you a horse right now, by the way, that I think could be a huge, huge overlay in here because he lost his last race, is Higher Power. And I got to respect Flavian Pratt, who's still incredibly optimistic and high on this horse. And he just said, throw that race out. He's very confident. About winning the race. And you got to remember that horse stumbled at the start, and it was a pretty decent stumble. And he was running last going into the first turn. Not the way he wants to run. And the horse that won the race stole the race. So, you know, he made a move along the inside, and he, you know, battled on for third. It was okay. And I know for a fact that John Sadler had told Flavian Pratt before the race, you do not need to win this race. Don't beat him up in any way at all. Just let him run his race. We're using this race as a prep for the Breeders' Cup. He's got the highest buyer at a mile and a quarter, that he got in the Pacific Classic, a 110. His race in the Pacific Classic was a terrific race. He won easily in there. We really don't know how good he is now. He's obviously getting really good. You know, it's the same connections that won last year. So you got to figure McKenzie's going to be bet over him. Code of Honor's going to be bet over him. Maybe even Vino Rosso will be bet over him. He'll be third, fourth choice. It's possible. We still don't know what's going on in the race. I was told, Rick Porter had told me earlier that they weren't even considering the Classic. Then they said they haven't thrown it out. I know Mandela wants to run in the sprint. Now it looks like the sprint. I don't know where. Yeah, but the thing about Omaha Beach is that you have to give him a chance whether he runs it 6 furlongs a mile or a mile and a quarter, although a mile and a quarter really is stretching it. I don't know, maybe you can. Can you recall a horse winning a major mile and a quarter race coming off a 6 furlong race?
It's funny you ask that because Andy Serling, Andy brought this up the other day on mm-hmm. Twitter and got the answer and had the answer.
Who was it?
Oh boy! Oh my God! What did he? What? And then we discussed it on the phone a couple of nights ago. I'm gonna forget who it was.
Was it an older horse? Was it like the Breeders' Cup Classic? It wasn't a Derby?
No, it was. It may have been like a Jockey Club Gold Cup or a big cap or so. I forget. Andy knew what right away. Andy said he thought about this horse and I forget who I guessed. But for goodness sakes,
I'll bet you whoever it was didn't win a grade one mile and a quarter off a grade one 6 furlong.
That may be the case I'll text Andy cause he's up here actually. Because this came up, it's funny that you asked that same question. Because I had the same. I was also trying to make that connection. But then when it seemed apparent that they weren't going to head in that direction,
even if a horse has done it, it's still stretching it. Because if he did, doing it in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, where it was probably what 6 horses in the race, and doing it in the Breeders' Cup Classic, where there's going to be 12, 13 horses in the race, in the championship race. Yeah, it's a stretch. Nothing his horse would do would surprise me. I mean, I think he's capable of winning all three. To tell you the truth, I give him a shot in all three, but I don't think any of these three races are made for him. I mean, I don't know if he can come back at 6 furlongs, depending on who goes in the sprint. Is Mattioli going to go in the sprint, or is Mattioli going to go in the dirt mile? We're not going to know that. Catalina Cruiser, is he going to go in the sprint? I mean, Catalina Cruz at 6.5 and 6 furlongs is undefeated in 3 starts, and he's won once in a mile and got beat. And then you got and then with the dirt mile, that would be the most normal place for him. But it doesn't do anything for him because it's a phony race. A 2-turn mile is like you might as well be running at a mile and 70 yards or a mile and 16th. It's not a true mile at all. And it's at a phony distance. There's a reason why there were no mile in 6. Remember, there's a few now or so, but for many years there were no grade one races at a mile and 1/16. This is kind of a distance. It's kind of a cheap, quirky type of distance.
I agree. I mean, the fact that we can only run the Breeders' Cup, the 1 mile configuration, only at Churchill is the only place where, the idea. By the way, it was Turkoman.
Turkoman.
Andy, right.
It was the Jockey Club. No, it was the Marlboro Cup, I think.
The Widener.
Oh, the Widener. Oh. Okay.
How about
I don't
that?
Even remember that.
How about that? The George Widener.
Okay. But if I remember correctly, I think that was like an allowance race, right? That 6 furlong race.
Andy says both wins were graded stakes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Pretty good. There's your column for next. There's a column coming out of that.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's good. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Turkoman's
but again, let's
his favorite.
See, I'd like to see who was in that who was in that Widener handicap. But no, all right. At least some horse has done it. But this is tougher. This is going from a Grade One 6 furlong race where he ran his guts out to go to a Grade One championship race at a mile and a quarter. But getting back to the two turn mile, you go back to the early races. I know Golden Sense won it twice. He was just faster than everybody. He just sprinted, from the outside post there, and you look at the early races there. Nobody can name the winners of the dirt mile. I can't. I'm drawing a blank on the names.
Midshipman. Midshipman and Fergus Land.
Maximus.
Golden Sense twice.
That I think Ken Ramsey owned. I think
Fergus Land.
Yeah, right. Who the heck remembers him?
I just remember.
it's just all these horses. Nobody remembers them because a mile race, what makes it such a great race, one turn, and you've got to run your behind off from start to finish. You've got to have speed, you've got to have toughness, and you have to have stamina to win at a flat mile, especially at Belmont Park, Churchill Downs, Aqueduct, all these great mile, all these tracks where that have Arlington was that way when before it was Poly Track. That's where everybody went out there for the Washington Park Handicap, where world records were set, the Arlington Classic. But that's a true mile. That's what the breeders want. The breeders not interested in the horse winning in the two turns, and that proves nothing. So I don't mind him running in the dirt mile. If he's going to come back, let's say, in a cigar mile, or use that as prep and just go straight into the Pegasus. So if he runs it in a 6 furlong race, is that going to help him win the Pegasus? I know that's going to be his last start, unless Wayne Hughes, has a change of heart and decides to keep him training, which I doubt very much. But, you want to lead him up to a mile and eighth race. And I don't know if you want to lead him up by running 2 6-furlong races, and bring him back at 6 furlongs after he ran an absolute gut-wrencher to beat a horse that's going to probably be third choice. But again, and then Mottoli. Do you run Mottoli in the dirt mile? He's not a two-turn horse. He's never been two turns. So what do you do with him? Is he fast enough at 6 furlongs? He got beat at 6 furlongs, but he had an excuse because he was dropping back from a mile, and he got stuck down on a dead rail. So I don't hold a race at Saratoga against them. There's so many weird things where horses can go in different places. And like I said, Catalina Cruiser, he looks like he's probably stronger with 6 furlongs right now. I know he won the San Diego at a mile and 16th, but, there was nothing in there, and he went out there 48-4. So can he win? Yeah. But he ran at a mile last year, and he did absolutely nothing. The only race he's ever lost was at a mile. So, and I tell you, another horse you have to look at is Elate. All right? She gets beaten a spinster. I think, now I know this is kind of strange, but by getting beat in the spinster, that would sway me to run in the classic. Because I don't know if she can win either race. I don't know if she can beat Midnight Bisou or some of these other fillies. Even Dunbar Road and Blue Prize, and I don't know if she could beat them at a mile and eighth, but I do know she loves the hell out of a mile and a quarter. And if it's going to separate all these races that she's gotten beat in, with the classic, it's the fact that it's a mile and a quarter, and not only is she 3 for 3 at a mile and a quarter, but she's won all three by daylight. So she just made, and again, she didn't beat anything in the Delaware Handicap. She beat good horses in the Alabama, but she loves a mile and a quarter. And if you go out there, she's a grinder. I don't know if she's got the speed. The last two races, she's gotten caught in the stretch. She got caught by Midnight Bisou, and she got caught by Blue Prize, who loves Keeneland. So I'm not going to hold that too much against her. But after a while, you're saying, is she tailing off? She had a little streak where she lost several races in a row, and then she won. So I don't know. I mean, I think I would go to her strength. I don't care if it's males or not. Fillies have run well in the Zenyatta won this race. Heck, Jalifa came from France, having never run on the dirt. I finished third behind AP Indy and Pleasant Tap. As a French filly, had never even run on the dirt. I thought Havre de Grace ran a good race. Zenyatta ran a better race, I think, than when she won the race, as good as she ran when she won. Azari didn't run badly, considering she was up against Gosapper and a pleasantly perfect. That was a very, very good field. And, you know, I think she was like fifth, and she didn't get beat badly in the race, four or five lengths or so. She was down on the inside. I mean, I think fillies can do it, but the one thing you know about a late is that that's her strength. So you might as well run her with her strength. If she gets beat, she gets beat. Nobody's going to hold it against her. Like I said, Havre de Grace ran, what, fourth? She ran okay. And that classic was very similar to this one. You know, that Drosselmeyer wound up winning that race.
That's right.
Several Drosselmeyers. You know, Yoshida, to me, is like Drosselmeyer. Same owner and same style of running. You know, that's her stablemate. But I say go with her strength. If she gets beat, at least she's doing it at what she wants to do and what she's best at is a mile and a quarter and not run her against Midnight Bisa, who she has not been able to beat at a mile and eighth or less. So that's just my thinking on that.
Well, I've got a quick aside for you. Going back to that Widener handicap and Turkoman under Chris McCarron beat Darn That Alarm, Gate Dancer.
Okay, nice horse. Not a mile and a quarter horse, but nice horse. A mile and eighth horse.
Darn That Alarm, Gate Dancer, Creme Fresh.
Oh, okay, that's a good field.
Proud Truth, who was the second choice.
Wow. Oh, that's a terrific field then.
And a horse by the name of Mo Exception.
Okay, I remember him.
That was 60-1.
With Proud Truth and Gate Dancer, I think he had that's the 1-2 finishes of the Breeders' Cup.
That's right.
The 85 Breeders' Cup Classic.
You know, I don't know if this chart is right, Steve, because there were only six horses in that field. And, of course, back then, in 86, there were 12 horses in every single race. So I don't understand why there's only six listed here. They must have they only listed six for the Top Flight that year. That must be a mistake. And I see where they only listed six in the Woodward. These must all be misprints, because back then every race had 16 horses in it.
Was the 86 Woodward?
I'm just kidding. I'm actually just looking. Oh, the Hollywood Starlet, that had six. They must just cut it off at six. The Hollywood Oaks had four.
If this is 86 that you're talking about, because that was The Woodward's probably right, because the 86 Woodward was Lady Secret against Precisionist, and that was a small field. I know that. That's when Precisionist went 146 and change.
Boy, obviously this is the American Racing Manual, which is so much fun. Boy, there's a lot of short fields. I'm stunned. The Hempstead, which is a grade one, had five.
Sounds like racing today.
The Gulfstream Park Handicap, Skip Trial, beat Proud Truth and Creme Fresh and Mo Exception. An Important Business, that had five.
That surprised, really, that would surprise me. The Gulfstream Park Handicap usually would get a much bigger field than that.
How about that? This is quite, there were two divisions of the Hollywood Derby that year. That filled. I'm poking fun. They only found two horses.
The Hollywood Derby's had several incarnations, you know, and it was a grass race there, but, you know, Hollywood Derby used to be a great race after the Triple Crown at a mile and a quarter in California, where a lot of horses, you know, would go out there and run the Hollywood Derby. Bold Reason, who's the broodmare sire of Sadler's Wells, he went out there in the East and won the Hollywood Derby and beat Jim French. So it was a good race back then. And then at one point it was run before the Kentucky Derby. It was run in between the Santa Anita Derby and the Kentucky Derby. In fact, Affirmed won both races. Affirmed won the Santa Anita Derby and the Hollywood Derby before he won the Kentucky Derby. So the Hollywood Derby's had a strange, very unusual history.
This was a crazy year, actually. I'm just thumbing through 86. There were all kinds of wild things that and interesting horses in the.
It was a very strange year. That was Woody Stevens' last Belmont, the last of his five Belmont wins.
Yeah. Also the year of Capote and Sacagawea.
Yeah, and then you had Ferdinand winning the Derby.
Here's one you can appreciate, Steve. And this just came up this week. I think, didn't it? Or no, it was a different West Coast winner. Garthorn won the
Met Mile. Yep,
yeah, for Bobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a good horse. He's a fast horse. Good miler.
No, this is the American. I'll take a picture for everybody of my American racing manuals, and you can go nuts. You open up one for some reason. Yesterday, actually, during the show, I opened up the it's still on the right here on the floor, the 68, because we were looking at something from 67. And
by the way, excuse me one second. You go back to that Capote Breeders' Cup. Who was closing fastest of all in that race to get third?
Well, I had it right here, so I
closed
it. Who was it? Go ahead.
Ali Sheba.
Ali Sheba. Look at you.
Ali Sheba was flying at the end of that race.
Yeah, that's just when, this was just about when I started becoming, interested in the mid-80s. Because there's a lot of these, I'm sure Tony's listening in. There's Broadbrush winning the Pennsylvania Derby that year.
Yeah. I'll give you an 86 trivia question. What jockey won the Haskell and the Travers?
Different horse or same horse?
Same horse. I think he was like 18 years old or so, 18 or 19 years old.
Chris DiCarlo.
Yes.
Equine Pilot won on Twitter, Chris DiCarlo.
Won both races on Wise Times.
On Wise Times, absolutely, for Phil Gleaves, beating Personal Flag and Danzig Connection.
Maybe Broad Rush.
Yep, absolutely. Paid
$24.60. Yeah, Chris DiCarlo. I mean, he's still around. He's still riding. He's still
absolutely
a jockey. But that was his big moment. You know, to win both those races as a teenager. Remember, his mother used to come to the track. You know, his mother used to like bring him to the track. He was just a kid. But so Phil Gleaves had just gone out on his own. Phil Gleaves was working for Woody Stevens.
For Woody. Yep.
Phil Gleaves used to exercise Conquistador Cielo and, a lot of his big horses. And he went out on his own. And that Haskell that Wise Times won was the first race I ever covered in my life.
Really?
Yep. That was the famous or infamous race that I was like, I wanted to do such a good job. I said, you guys, I've never like interviewed anybody after a race, a jockey or a trainer or anything, or written a recap. But it was for the Thoroughbred Times, and I was the New Jersey correspondent. And it was my first race. I went on to cover a lot of races for him, but that was the first race I ever covered. And I went down to the barn like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and went to the barn, to every single barn, to visit with every horse, to talk to every horse's groom. I went and got information on background on every single horse. And I got to meet the horses, and I got really close to all the horses in there. And then, like, at 4 o'clock, the skies opened up, and it poured. And I said, oh, no. It's not that I minded a sloppy track. I was in such a weird state covering my first races that I felt sorry for all the horses because I'd gotten to know them. I said, oh, they're going to have to go out and run on a sloppy track. And I was like, I was so upset. And you can't believe how upset I was. I said, my first race is going to be in the slop. And I go up to the press box, and who's sitting up there is Joe Hirsch. And I go over, by the way, and the first thing, I've told this story many times, but whoever, for those who haven't heard it, and, you know, I'm so upset, and I go over to Joe, and I said, oh, Joe, it's such a shame about the slop. This is Joe Hirsch, who's seen like 800,000 sloppy tracks that he's covered.
I know what's coming.
Right. So I go over to him, and I said, oh, Joe, I said, it's really a shame about the track. Joe just turns his head ever so slowly, you know, as he does, and looks up at me, and he goes, Steve, it was a shame about Marie Antoinette. I never complained about a track, a sloppy track after that.
Oh, it still makes me laugh every time you tell it.
I mean, it's not like it's rehearsed. I mean, where did he come up with that? You know, I mean, it's just like, it just entered his mind. Did that sentence just form in his mind at that very second? But it's still one of my all-time favorite lines, and the way he delivered it. Steve, same about Marie Antoinette. I go, what?
The best.
Well, that was Joe Hirsch for you. But that was my first race. Yeah, how he got into Wise Times, I don't know. But
that's the racing manual. I'm going to put up the picture. I just took a picture of my bank of racing manuals, and everybody will understand how you go down the proverbial rabbit hole, and for a guy that didn't know if you could make it through a half hour, you've done okay.
See what happens, you know? I guess I needed the distraction.
Exactly. It's good for you. It's you therapy. Know,
so I mean, yeah, I mean, so that was that was pretty wild.
Steve,
yeah, and then there was, and then we're talking about Woody's Last Belmont, you know, and that was Danzig Connection, who wound up, and I remember covering the, I think it was the Pegasus, it was one of those three, or Patterson, or maybe it was the Patterson or the Pegasus, one of those three, and the rage, everybody was raving about the next superstar was Ogeigen. And again, I was praying for no rain because they would have scratched him. And he ran Ogeigen, and Danzig Connection beat him. And I said, oh, wow. You know, but Danzig Connection. And that's a good trivia question itself. Who was Woody Stevens, you know, last of his five Belmont winners? A lot of people don't remember Danzig Connection at all.
They, in the press box at Belmont, the five of them, five placards. Make it...
Or you walk right in. As soon as you walk into the clubhouse, Woody's corner.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, this was tremendous as always, and we'll be this much closer next week, and we should have a couple more decisions and some final, at least that much closer. I mean, entry day the 21st, but
there's some work. I think they. I can't remember. There's so many decisions we made. But some decision they said was supposed to be made today. I don't know if it was Omaha Beach or one of the decisions. I'm pretty sure they're going to cross enter. We won't know.
Yeah,
about
but they're them. But they're leaning. They're sprinting. It seems that seems pretty much.
Their mile is he's already won the Met Mile. Winning this phony Breeders' Cup Mile is not going to enhance him at stud at all.
No.
If he can win the Breeders' Cup Sprint and the Met Mile, that's huge.
Yeah,
it's a tougher race. I mean, you still got Imperial Ant, you got Chancelot, and I mean a lot of fast horses in there. But
get to work on that Turkoman piece.
Yeah, right.
Call McCarron.
A piece of history there. I'll have to look into that more closely.
And the Tallahassee. I'll pitch in. I'll send you what I have come up with here in just in the last 15 minutes, which is pretty good, actually.
Father, here's your horse and name I'm going to throw at you. You can go on YouTube and find it. There's a horse coming for the Breeders' Cup Mile who's coming.
Blue Chipper! Blue Chipper!
Oh, you know about him.
Of course we know about Blue Chipper.
Okay.
Come on! Don't be trying to get the pork chop past the bloodhound.
I thought I was giving you a scoop.
No scoop.
Okay.
Yeah, he's on his way actually, and he's got the whole quarantine thing, and that's great. He's a U.S. bred. He's diamond bred, actually.
He's by kids now.
Yes. So he's, but
yeah,
he's.
He sold it. I think he came in September sale. I think.
Yeah, and this is the second or third Korean to make it back like this.
Really?
There was the sprinter too. There's Mr. Crow, but there was also Korean bred. But in terms of the horses that we see, the KOID and the KRA buy and then campaign in Korea, you know, where they do a lot of dirt racing. It's not turf. They have turf, but they do a lot of dirt running at Korea.
Yeah.
But this will be fun.
I'll buy you, Steve, no matter what.
Well, I don't even know. Derek Lawson asked me about him,
he's the one who told me about him. He said, I got a horse for you. You're not going to believe this. So Flavian Pratt, he got this horse because he was going to ride Catalina Cruiser if they ran him in the dirt mile, but they decided to go with Rosario. And so Derek calls me up. He's all excited about this horse. This is yesterday I spoke to him. He said, tell me, go to YouTube, watch this horse, blah, blah, blah. Something I break the news. You already know about it.
Trained by Kim Young Kwan.
There you go.
All right.
Bob Baffert of Korea.
Bob Baffert of Korea. We love that war ba. Steve, this was great. I will talk to you next week.
Okay, Steve.
Steve Askett, everybody, and on the mend and on the muscle. I wasn't worried when last night he said, I don't know if I can do a segment. I don't know. I wasn't worried. Tony Black is going to join us back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand.
We're back at the races. Somehow, just a half an hour. And I told Tony Black, Tony, can I put you on at 11? Because, you know, went long with Nicole Russo. And I don't think Steve Haskin will be up for a full segment. And Steve got into the bit, Tony. I mean, he ran right off with us.